Chapter 16, titled The Divine and Demoniac Natures. Then this previous chapter then was describing about the material world, the banyan tree, and how it's nourished by the three modes. And then these different situations on these branches give you different, you taste different aspects of the material existence. So here then it mentions the two basic natures, the divine and demoniac. So here then Krishna opens with describing what is the divine nature. Text 1, 2, 3. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, fearlessness, purification of one's existence, cultivation of spiritual knowledge, charity, self-control, performance of sacrifice, study of the Vedas, austerity, simplicity, nonviolence, truthfulness, freedom from anger, renunciation, tranquility, aversion to fault-finding, compassion for all living entities, freedom from covetousness, gentleness, modesty, steady determination, vigor, forgiveness, fortitude, cleanliness, and freedom from envy and the passion for honor. These transcendental qualities, O son of Bharata, belong to godly men endowed with divine nature. So then here is 26 qualities that are given for the divine nature, those situated in goodness. So then Srila Prabhupada then opens this chapter with these points. In the beginning of the 15th chapter, the banyan tree of this material world was explained. The extra roots coming out of it were compared to the activities of the living entities, some auspicious, some inauspicious. In the 9th chapter, also, the devatas, or godly, and the asuras, the ungodly, or demons, were explained. Now, according to Vedic rites, activities in the mode of goodness are considered auspicious for progress on the path of liberation. And such activities are known as daivi prakriti, transcendental by nature. Those who are situated in the transcendental nature make progress on the path of liberation. For those who are acting in the mode of passion and ignorance, on the other hand, there is no possibility of liberation. Either they will have to remain in this material world as human beings, or they will descend among the species of animals or even lower forms of life. In the 16th chapter, the Lord explains both the transcendental nature and its attendant qualities, and the demoniac nature and its qualities. He also explains the advantages and disadvantages of these qualities. So then, Prabhupada then closes, ends this purport with, all these 26 qualifications mentioned are transcendental qualities. They should be cultivated according to the different statuses of social and occupational order. The purport is that even though material conditions are miserable, if these qualities are developed by practice, by all classes of men, then gradually it is possible to rise to the highest platform of transcendental realization. Yeah. So, now it's being very, Krishna has explained before the process of Nishkam Karma Yoga, engaging in the activities of this Varnashram Dharma for the purpose of pleasing the Supreme Lord. And then he is given that the goal must be bhakti, and that is the whole purpose, is bhakti. Then he gives the breakdown of the material, basically the material nature, how it functions, and how the living entity can come to the platform of knowledge by understanding our relationship with the Lord and with the material body, the field of activities. Then, after describing the whole field, the material world, then here he's describing this divine and demoniac. So it's interesting to note, in this chapter, basically it's being pointed out by Krishna and by the Acharyas, one who follows prescribed duties or Varnashram Dharma is divine, and one who doesn't is demoniac. And it's basically that simple, that straightforward. One may, what will be seen here is it may be demoniac qualities, not that one is a demon, but the lack of desiring to follow the occupational duties given by the Lord Himself, that mood or flavor is tinged by passion and ignorance, or material desire and ignorance of our actual position. So then it falls within the category of demoniac, because Krishna here has just given two. He didn't say divine, neutral, and demoniac. Neutral is considered part of demoniac. It means demoniac, where we say ignorance, then that is, you know, total ignorance and total, you know, being totally against the Lord. That's the Naradhama. This is also very interesting, it'll come up at the end of the chapter. How it's pointed out, someone who knows about these things, hears about these things, but doesn't want to follow them. They want to follow their own program. It's considered demoniac. It's because we've been in the material world since time immemorial, and we've been associating with these demoniac qualities, passion, ignorance. So it's natural some may be there. But Krishna is bringing this out so that we're very careful within our minds just to follow. Because it's Krishna has given his directions how to live in this world. And if we follow Krishna's directions, then Krishna is pleased. So his directions coming from him are transcendental. I just mentioned these qualities. They are transcendental qualities. Because the point is they're all connected with the attempt to elevate oneself, to actually try to benefit oneself. These same qualities may be used by materialistic people for their own means, in the areas of karma, jnana, and yoga. But we must remember that they actually come from the Lord and are given by the Lord, and they're meant for using in His service. So that is brought out here. Someone may misuse them, that uses the Krishna's instructions simply for karma, for fruitive result, or jnana for merging in the Brahman, or yoga for mystic siddhi. But this is a misuse of Krishna's transcendental path, or the path of bhakti. So here, then, this will all come to light as we progress. Do these 26 qualities have any connection with the devotee 26? Have you ever checked that? More or less. I'm just wondering if it's just different words he's using, or if it's actually...
There's a much longer quality of knowledge.
Yeah. So now after this, we see the same principle of delineating what's proper and then what's improper afterwards. It's very interesting because it's just psychologically, you describe one thing, right? I describe subject A, right? Then I'll describe in contrast to that subject B. So after hearing B, the natural thing is to go back to A to compare. Now that you've heard both, and the last one you've heard, you go back to the first one to just kind of like, you know, check that balance. So now the Vedic principles, you start with what is proper. You know, you define the divine. Then you tell the demoniac. Then after the demoniac, then you'll naturally come back to the divine. So the mind will have a tendency to rest on the divine. Now if we describe the demoniac first, and then think now we'll give come to the conclusion of the divine, after hearing the divine, one will have a tendency to go back and compare that to the demoniac. So unless the mind is very fixed, that it'll go again back to the divine, the last point you thought of will be the demoniac. So it's a very interesting, you see, Krishna is always doing like this, like that. The acharyas also do. They always start from what is the actual proper, then understanding that, then you compare everything else to that. You know? Like we described. You'll see in the Shastra, it always describes the Uttamadhikari first. Then compared to that, then you can understand the Madhyama Kanistha. But if we start with the Kanistha, like we generally ourselves like to describe it, then the problem is we don't really understand Uttam. Because we get it backwards. We start from the one as a standard. And then it's like, this is standard, and then that's something very lofty. No, the Uttam is standard, and then the Madhyam and Kanishtha are the lower platforms of one attempting to get to the Uttam platform. So it gives a completely different flavor. You know? One may say it doesn't really matter, but even in chemistry and things like that, depending on what thing you put first, you get a totally different reaction. You know, like in cooking. If you put the sugar first, let's say you're cooking kheer, you put the sugar first, you get a caramel flavor and it'll be red color. You put the sugar last, you won't get that. You get a different flavor and it'll be white. Or if you put the sugar in the beginning, like if you're cooking halva, then it'll get more solid and the grains will dry more. If you put it in at the end, it'll make the halva more soft. Same thing as you're putting, but where you put it, it will have a different effect. So if one says it doesn't matter, then means we don't know the science. So now Krishna describes the demoniac. Pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness, and ignorance. These qualities belong to those of demoniac nature, O son of Prita. So it says that these qualities belong to those of demoniac nature. It's not that these are the demoniac nature. It means those with demoniac nature who are against the Supreme Lord, against the devotees, like that, they have these qualities. So that's important to understand, because the process of anartha nivritti means removing any of these qualities that are there. So that what we find these in the heart doesn't necessarily make one a demon, but it just means that these are demoniac qualities may be present in the heart. So then, Prabhupada mentions in the purport, in this verse, the royal road to hell is described. The demoniac want to make a show of religion and advancement in spiritual science, although they do not follow the principles. They are always arrogant or proud in possessing some type of education or so much wealth. They desire to be worshipped by others and demand respectability, although they do not command respect. Over trifles they become very angry and speak harshly, not gently. They do not know what should be done and what should not be done. They do everything whimsically, according to their own desire, and they do not recognize any authority. These demoniac qualities are taken on by them from the beginning of their bodies in the wombs of their mothers. And as they grow, they manifest all these inauspicious qualities. So here is proud in possessing some kind of education or so much wealth, and they're very much in respectability. If we may remember back, these are the qualities that was described also in the Naradhama. Is that it was mentioned, those who are born in, you know, decent, respectable families, like that, but instead of using it for advancing in spiritual knowledge, they become proud of their wealth and their position and education and all that, and make up their own religious processes. Then text 5. So Krishna then, now naturally Arjuna is going to think, well, what am I? So then here this next point comes up. And he's thinking, I'm going to go out on this battlefield and I'm going to, you know, make all kinds of trouble here. So is that going to be considered divine or demoniac? Text 5. The transcendental qualities are conducive to liberation, whereas the demoniac qualities make for bondage. Do not worry, O son of Pandu, for you are born with the divine qualities. Then Krishna says to Arjuna, Ma Sucha, do not worry. Srila Prabhupada expands on this point. Lord Krishna encouraged Arjuna by telling him that he was not born with demoniac qualities. His involvement in the fight was not demoniac, because he was considering the pros and cons. He was considering whether respectable persons such as Bhishma and Drona should be killed or not. So he is not acting under the influence of anger, false prestige, or harshness. Therefore, he was not of the quality of the demons. Even one with the Burijan points out, even one with a demoniac nature can change his qualities in favorable association, because one's qualities develop according to one's association. By associating those with overwhelmed by lust, anger, and greed, we become lusty, angry, and greedy. Then again, we can develop perfect qualities by associating with the perfect, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Now, during his 1975 visit to Melbourne, Srila Prabhupada was asked, "How can I become sincere?" His answer, "How can you become a drunkard? If you want to become a drunkard, you associate with drunkards. If you want to become sincere, associate with these devotees. They are sincere." So if we have bad qualities, that's because of association, either this life, previous lifetimes, like that. So the way to change it is by good association. Because the point is that the soul is none of these qualities. Like the soul is not material. So by bad association, then we become attached to those passionate ignorance. By good association, then we become develop the attachments or the qualities of goodness. So the point is that whatever the position, then one can be elevated. This is the meaning of the Daiva Varnashram. It doesn't consider what one's birth is. But the main thing is to how we are able to surrender to Krishna, how we are able to take advantage of the association of devotees, how we are to engage ourselves in Krishna's service. That is the essential element. The non-daiva varnashram, or the asurik varnashram, is based on birth. That one has these qualities, that's all. But the daiva varnashram means that if one is able to, how one is able to apply oneself in devotional process, and where does one fit. But as pointed out before, Prabhupada made the point, Krishna made this point, is that one has to find his place within the system. Because Krishna has made this system, Krishna has made human beings, so they fit in the system. If they don't fit in the system, then they're antevas, they should live in the forest. And if they're not, you know, really thieves and other such kind of people, then they can interface with the civilized persons. But if they're too, you know, rough and ready, then they should remain in the forest. So that's how Krishna set it up. So it's pretty straightforward. It's just a matter of whether we want to accept it. Text 6. O son of Prita, in this world there are two kinds of created beings. One is called divine and the other demoniac. I have already explained to you at length the divine qualities. Now hear from me of the demoniac. So Srila Prabhupada states in his purport that the essential distinction between the divine and the demoniac is adhering to the Vedic literature. Quote, "The conditioned living entities are divided into two classes in this world. Those who are born with divine qualities follow a regulated life. That is to say, they abide by the injunctions in scripture and by the authorities. One should perform duties in the light of authoritative scripture. This mentality is called divine. One who does not follow the regulative principles as they are laid down in the scriptures, and who acts according to his whims, is called demoniac or asuric. There is no other criterion but obedience to the regulative principles of scripture." And then Burijan says Krishna himself will confirm this point at the end of the chapter. So this is the bottom line, is that Srila Prabhupada has pointed out to us this culture. Gita has said you should follow it. And Prabhupada in his purports, and then especially in the Bhagavatam, we have so much nice example that is given in Chaitanya Charitamrita, so much nice example. So then this is basically the bottom line. Do we accept what Prabhupada and the Acharyas and the scriptures say according to how we should behave, regulate our life, and engage in proper association with devotees? Or do we not? We want to make up our own system. That's basically the bottom line. And Prabhupada says it really clear right here. There's no other criterion but obedience to the regulative principles of scriptures. That's basically what we have. Though in one place Prabhupada, not here, is mentioning that even if one can't follow the Vedic culture, then one should follow some scripture, authorized scripture. and the rules and regulations that are there. Like we would see, probably would argue with the Christians, okay, you're saying these are your scriptures, you want to follow them, fine, we don't have any problem. But here it somehow or another opens up with thou shalt not kill, and you seem to be killing. And he would just stick to this point. Your scriptures say this, you're supposed to follow it for regulated life, you're not following. So that point is there. It's not a problem. Someone wants to follow other authorized systems, they can follow, but you have to follow the system. You can't make it up as you go along. Otherwise, then, what's the meaning of that? Because religion is given by God. So one has to follow God's system. And if one doesn't want to, then this is the demoniac nature. Okay, so then here, then Krishna has giving a general description. Now he'll get into the details. Text 7. Those who are demoniac do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. Neither cleanliness, nor proper behavior, nor truth is found in them. Then Bhujan points out, Krishna will later state directly that actions performed without proper discrimination between right and wrong are symptomatic of the mode of passion, a mode in which the demoniac are richly endowed. Then this is from 1831. O son of Prita, that understanding which cannot distinguish between religion and irreligion, between action that should be done and action that should not be done, is in the mode of passion. So this is here. So the demoniac means they're situated in passion ignorance. So then we have those who don't know what to do, what not to do, and can't distinguish between them. So that's the mode of passion. Then of course you have the classic who thinks irreligion is religion and religion is irreligion. That's the personal mode of ignorance. So that's the real hardcore, you know, demons like that. You know, or the real mudha. Here. But this one where they can't distinguish and they make up their own, this is the Naradhamma. So it's actually considered worse. Because the mudha generally just keeps to himself. Like that. Sometimes then they're very aggressive and all that. But unless the Naradhamma has a philosophy of that, which will come up here. So because the Shastra defines the difference between engagement in religious and irreligious life, it follows that those bereft of discrimination between proper and improper actions are also bereft of either faith in Shastra or a proper understanding of it. Thus the demoniac, rather than basing their actions on Shastra, base them on bodily consciousness. Therefore they act with little concern for truth or the welfare of others. So then Bhurijan Prabhu gives here a nice story here. Even if a demon propounds a philosophy, like you see, it's very popular to make up their own systems. Systems of mental speculation are philosophy, or trying to work out some religious system, but it's just made up by somebody. So here he points out here, even if a demon propounds a philosophy, its value is compared to the preaching of the vulture and the jackal. Once a boy died, and his relatives, lamenting with great emotion, gathered around the body in preparation for the funeral ceremony. Suddenly a jackal appeared, and with sweet words began to glorify the affection which those present felt for the boy. He also began to speak of the boy's wonderful qualities, and then requested those present to spend the precious hours until sunset, before which a body should be cremated, bathed in sweet remembrances of the boy. They could return in the morning to burn the body, he said. Meanwhile, a vulture, after eyeing the situation from above, swooped down. He immediately began philosophically refuting the jackal's words. The vulture explained that the soul, the actual loved one within the body, had already departed, and that lamenting for a dead body was simply sentimental and foolish. The vulture then recommended that all present should become philosophically fixed in the difference between body and soul, and should leave without further lamentation. In this way, the vulture, who would feast on the body if the relatives left, spoke to defeat the jackal's arguments. The jackal, being a creature of the night, planned to devour the body in the dark. Yeah. So, like this, they make up philosophies that are based on the jackal is speaking, you know, from the Dharma Shastras and these things on how much affection and different things and the relationships that are all there. And it's bringing out the sentimental side, you know, like this, that we should, you know, remember this boy and so nice and become inspired in this way. But for the whole purpose of is that you can't burn the body at night, and then when the relatives leave, he'll eat the body. So his only purpose was to get them to not burn the body so he can eat it. And the vulture then comes along and says, oh, this is nonsense, you know, you're dealing on the sentimental level. But higher than that is the philosophy of the eternal soul. So the soul has already left. So why are you lamenting? Why give up this foolish sentiment and leave and go back to your duties? Because simply he wanted to eat the body then, because he at night can't see. So it's like this. It sounds good. It even seems it's based on scriptures. But this is the principle of the Naradhamma. Naradhamma takes scriptures, twists it around, and then makes problems. Like that. So one has to be very careful. Text 8. They say that this world is unreal, with no foundation, no God in control. They say it is produced of sex desire, and has no cause other than lust. Following such conclusions, the demoniac, who are lost to themselves, and who have no intelligence, engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. Srila Baladeva Vibhushan comments, the demoniac create philosophies to propound their personal opinions. By adhering to their philosophies, they destroy the whole world. Resorting to these philosophies, these persons of meager intelligence, who possess petty opinions, are lost to themselves, in the sense that they cannot perceive the actual distinction between the self, the body, and other things. They are engaged in horrible work and devote themselves to malicious and cruel activities. By causing the world to deviate from the principles of spiritual life, they are the enemies of the world, unless they exert their influence for the world's destruction. So the main point where it says here that these unbeneficial, horrible works are meant to destroy the world because they take one away from the scriptures, away from the conclusions. That's the essential. And naturally, Ben, I think, mentions that Prabhupada in his purport then brings out other aspects of the term ugra karma. Or pain. It just depends what his goal is. Means the if one is actually following the scriptures but for your material benefit, that's better than not. Because then at least some knowledge is there. But better than that is to perform the prescribed duties without attachment. That's the point. Actually, what is Krishna mentions in that in the last no two few chapters back, he says, if you can't just give in charity and, you know, give up the fruits of your work, even if it's not for devotional service, like after he said, best is perfect surrender to Krishna, full surrender. If not, follow sadhana bhakti. If not, then work for Krishna. Follow this path of nishkam karma yoga or sakam. If you can't do that, you're not even really relate to Krishna consciousness or this or that. At least give the fruits of your labor away. Because by performing duties, your prescribed duties, and giving away the fruits, you gain knowledge. You become elevated. So then you may come to the platform where you actually can appreciate Krishna consciousness. Is the present time when it's not. Then it says, if you can't do that, then cultivate knowledge. Because even though knowledge is on a higher platform than karma, but unless one actually is situated on that platform, and you can't really be situated on that platform unless you're a devotee, then it's the next step down. And by cultivating knowledge, you may come to the point where you actually do take up this prescribed duties without attachment. And that he says, better than that, though, is meditation. You can absorb yourself in thinking of the Lord and chanting. Then that's better than that jnana. And then better than that, and it goes right back to the point before, is detached prescribed duties. You know? So he brings it right back. So it's, Krishna's even saying, better than not disregarding the Vedic scriptures and not following them and all that, is to follow them. Even though they may be for the purpose of karma, jnana, yoga. But one should not go against the principles. One should follow them properly. If you're going to follow karma, you follow it. If you're going to follow jnana, you follow it. If you're going to follow the process of jnana, you follow that. But if you make a hodgepodge out of it, then that becomes a mess. So to that degree. So Prabhupada mentioned that someone following, even on a lower level, you know, the instructions of the Lord, specifically the Vedic, and that's better than some other philosophical, you know, speculative process, or even the more, how you say, the pranamoy, the non-Vedic religious principles, which aren't actually religion. They're based lower than that. They're based on pranamoy. While the Vedic cult, the Vedic prescribed duties are based on jnanamoy or manamoy, like this. They're based on the third level, so they're higher. So if one can do that, then nice, but otherwise it doesn't really have any benefit. Ultimately, until it's connected to Krishna, there's no benefit. But the point is it's better than not following any of the Vedic rules and regulations or conclusions. Because generally you'll find such a person can be influenced to take up Krishna consciousness if they get good association. Because of their absorption in the various, how you say, activities, Vedic activities, these Vedic activities are based on fundamental points of actual devotional service, but they're hidden inside, so the materialist doesn't notice, is association and chanting. So then by this, if they take up that process, then they if they're sincere, then they get good association. Then from their platform, then they can convert where they are into devotional service. Instead of following, say, Nishkam Karma Yoga for just material purposes, one follows it for devotional purposes. Or someone's into jnana, he can follow it like a Prakashananda Saraswati, following the path of jnana. Then Lord Chaitanya showed how that path of jnana is for understanding the Supreme Lord. They remained as sannyasis and continued that following that same path, but now they were doing it for Krishna as devotees. Like that. So like that, they just convert from the basic reflection of the actual path to the actual path. But ultimately, there's no benefit. This is where it becomes confusing. We'll recommend it's better than this, but then in comparison, it's also useless. But it's the best of the useless. You know? And Prabhupada points out here of the Ugra Karma. Then Prabhupada refers in his purport to animal killing and nuclear weapons as examples of Ugra Karma. And then in the Bhagavatam commentaries, he offers other examples: technological advancement, slaughterhouses, breweries, cigarette factories, nightclubs, and large-scale industrial development and trade. Continuing text 10. Taking shelter of insatiable lust and absorbed in the conceit of pride and false prestige, the demoniac thus illusioned are always sworn to unclean work, attracted by the impermanent. They believe that to gratify the senses is the prime necessity of human civilization. Thus, until the end of life, their anxiety is immeasurable. Bound by a network of hundreds and thousands of desires, and absorbed in lust and anger, they secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. The demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future, more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. I am the Lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man, surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices. I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. See here, one of the central features, I am the Lord of everything, I am the enjoyer. Comes back to that wanting to control and the attachment. Thus perplexed by various anxieties and bound by a network of illusions, they become too strongly attached to sense enjoyment and fall down into hell. Self-complacent and always impudent, deluded by wealth and false prestige, they sometimes proudly perform sacrifices in name only, without following any rules or regulations. Bewildered by false ego, strength, pride, lust, and anger, the demons become envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in their own bodies and in the bodies of others, and blaspheme against the real religion. Srila Prabhupada mentioned in his purport to text 18 that the demoniac envy not only the Lord but the Vedic scriptures. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that the demoniac also envy those who worship the Lord. Their envy takes the forms of being unable to tolerate a devotee's advancement and of seeing only a devotee's faults, despite his numerous good qualities. So that's also very important. One of the divine qualities is aversion to fault finding. And so the demoniac qualities, then one can only see faults. And now how Krishna reciprocates with such people. Those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest among men, I perpetually cast into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life. Attaining repeated birth among the species of demoniac life, O son of Kunti, such persons can never approach me. Gradually they sink down to the most abominable type of existence. Srila Baladeva Vibhushan comments, Arjuna may ask, but after many lifetimes, they should eventually receive your mercy, by which they will be freed from their demoniac births. Lord Krishna answers, these foolish persons take birth in demoniac forms of life, birth after birth. Failing to achieve me, they descend to lower forms of life, even taking birth as dogs. It's interesting to note here, when they say, birth amongst the species of demoniac life, one generally thinks of animals as that, but here he's basically meaning non-animals. You know, humans, or, you know, you have so many different kinds of ghosts and rakshasas, yakshas, and this and that, and all kinds of strange and wonderful things. In the phrase failing to achieve me, the word eva certainly indicates there is no possibility of my mercy falling upon them. It is even difficult for them to achieve a good form of life that would be a prerequisite to obtaining me. The following questions can then be raised. But the Supreme Lord automatically has his every desire fulfilled. He can make even the unqualified qualified. The answer is, yes, he could, if he had such a desire. But actually, he does not have even the seed of that desire. Thus, the author of the Vedanta Sutra has described the Lord's partiality in the Sutra, Vaishamya Narajnena. The Supreme seems to be unfair because of his partiality to some and his enmity towards others. So I think this was described before, is because the demoniac, he doesn't care about himself, that they are envious of him and this and that. That's not a problem. You know, he's been putting up with that since time immemorial. But what disturbs him is that their enmity towards the devotees. So because they're enemies of the devotees, then they become enemies of him. Like that. That is the point. And those who associate with the devotees, praise the devotees, they become dear to the Lord. So the devotee, if he has this tendency to fault find, then that will not be taken kindly by the Lord. It's the first offense to the holy name. So that's his first point. You want to make some advancement in chanting, first thing you do is give up this. He said this is the worst. Right? The seventh is considered the most abominable, most disgusting. That the Lord is so kind that simply by chanting we can be relieved of unlimited, how much sins there are in the universe we can be relieved from. So if we take advantage of the Lord's mercy and commit sin on the string, that's the most abominable. And such a person, you know, even the man-eaters and others, they don't even want to have anything to do with it like that. They're just like low. Someone who's ungrateful like that. You heard that? I think we discussed it. Wasn't it in this? We discussed the story of the heron and the, I think it was, and the drum on this point of gratefulness. And I think it's told in the Mahabharata. So once there was this heron, and he was, you know, living very peacefully somewhere, and this Brahmin came out. I think it was a Brahmin. Maybe it wasn't a Brahmin, but some man came along. And then he was lamenting and feeling very, very bad. So the heron asked him, what's your problem? He says, you know, no money and so many anxieties, this and that, and taking care of, you know, family, so many different things. It's very difficult and I can't get any money together. So the heron said, don't worry. You go to my friend, the Rakshasa, and you tell him that you're my friend, and then you ask him, he'll take care of it. So then this person went off in the direction where the Rakshasa lived. So then when he got close to where the Rakshasas were living, the Rakshasa saw him, you know, and caught him. You know, that, well, here comes, we don't even have to go out for dinner, you know, dinner is and delivered. You know, so then when they bring him before the main Rakshasa, the king, then the person tells him, you know, I've been sent by the heron, you know, he's my friend. So then immediately the king Rakshasa told the other Rakshasas, you leave him. Anyone who's the heron is my friend, and anyone who's a friend of the heron is my friend also. So he says, so you, what have you come for? You must be in need of something in that. He says, yes, I have no wealth and very difficult in that. The Rakshasa says, don't worry, you know, I'll take care of that. So the person went back to the house, so much wealth was there, they were living very prosperously. Then one day came along and saw the heron, and then the heron was asking how he was, this, that, and you know, he's doing quite fine, and he became very proud of his wealth and all that, you know, position gained and everything. So they you know, and he was thinking, how is this? I can be friends with a bird, you know, lowly bird like that, you know, like that. So the person then in pride then killed the bird and, you know, decided to eat him like that. You know, there's no other, you know, what other use is there for a bird, you know? So then the Rakshasa, because they have their, you know, mystic powers and all that, he could understand what happened, that this heron had been killed. So then he sent his Rakshasa, you know, followers to catch this person. And then the person was brought before the Rakshasa king, and the king explained, you know, that, you know, this heron, because of his friendship, then you have gotten benefit, and you are not, you're ungrateful, you know. So because of this, you deserve to be killed. So then king had the, you know, this person killed. Then the, you know, Rakshasas decided, you know, we don't want to, you know, they eat people, but they've said, we don't want to eat this guy, you know. That's too low, you know. So then they took the guy over to the man-eaters, you know, I guess the cannibals, like that, and said, here's something, you know, snack for you, you know. So then the man-eaters was thinking, hey, wait a minute, you guys eat men also, so why would you be bringing a man to me, you know, to eat, like that. And then the Rakshasas explained, you know, the story, how this person had been ungrateful and had killed the heron who had been his benefactor and well-wisher and all that. And then after hearing the story, then the man-eater says, now, listen, we're low, you know, we're like, we eat people and this and that, but we're not that low. It means we'll eat anybody, but we won't eat someone who's ungrateful. But the point of the story is someone who's ungrateful, even the man-eaters won't touch him. They consider him so low class. Like that. So this point of the gratefulness, you know, what is gained, is very, very important here. And so those who we therefore it's considered the most abominable of the offenses. But it's the worst, though, is offending the devotees. The one at least means you yourself are disgusting. But if you defend the devotees, then that upsets the Lord very much. The other one is just everybody else won't touch you. But here it's in the Lord, you become the Lord's enemy because you're against the Lord's devotees. So the first offense then is the worst. So therefore his partiality is based on he's equal with everybody, but those who support the devotees, then he is favorable towards. And those who are against the devotees, then he has enmity towards. Though he is neutral towards anyone. At that point, your connection, how you see devotees, if you're favorably connected or unfavorably, then you become either his friend or his enemy. Then in Prabhupada's purport to this verse, text 20, and it is, Bhujan says, Prabhupada writes strongly. It is clearly stated that the demoniac people, life after life, are put into the wombs of similar demons, and, not achieving the mercy of the Supreme Lord, they go down and down, so that at last they achieve bodies like those of cats, dogs, and hogs. It is clearly stated that such demons have practically no chance of receiving the mercy of God at any stage of later life. Hog, cats, dogs, and hogs. Specific name pets. Those in the Western culture, yes. So then Baladeva Dibhushan mentions here, yeah, Krishna, Arjuna now asks Krishna, people hearing this are going to want to give up these qualities. What can they do to accomplish this? Then Krishna then will answer this. Then he presents us with our choice, either adopt a demoniac life and become degraded, or reject it and obtain the supreme destination. Text 21. There are three gates leading to hell: lust, anger, and greed. Every sane man should give these up, for they lead to the degradation of the soul. So, Bodhisattva points out here is that from lust, then if it can't be fulfilled, then anger comes. And even if it is fulfilled, then we become greedy. So lust, anger, and greed come. But the basis is lust. When the lust is there, you either get something, become angry, get something, become greedy, or don't get it, you become angry. And it's from this then comes illusion. After that, either by anger or by greed, we become illusion, moha, and loss of discrimination. Next comes mada, intoxication of pride. Become very proud of your position and this and that. And then from all this comes envy, matsarya. Means when those are all there, then envy can very nicely manifest. Then, if one can avoid this, then the man who has escaped these three gates of hell, O son of Kunti, performs acts conducive to self-realization, and thus gradually attains the supreme destination. So now Krishna, he makes very clear this choice. Here he gives the same point basically in the negative and then in the positive. 23. He who discards scriptural injunctions and acts according to his own whims attains neither perfection nor happiness nor the supreme destination. Then Prabhupada's purport shows a connection between not following Shastra and acting in lust, anger, and greed. As described before, the Shastra Vidhi, or the direction of the Shastra, is given to the different castes and orders of human society. Everyone is expected to follow these rules and regulations. If one does not follow them and acts whimsically, according to his lust, greed, and desire, then he never will be perfect in his life. In other words, a man may theoretically know all these things, but if he does not apply them in his own life, then he is to be known as the lowest of mankind. This is where in the previous, we were describing Narottama as one who knows the devotional principles and that doesn't follow them. So here, Prabhupada makes it very clear. Now, everyone is expected to follow these rules and regulations. If one does not follow them and acts whimsically, according to his own lust, greed, and desire, then he never will be perfect in this life. In other words, a man may theoretically know all these things, but if he does not apply them in his own life, then he is to be known as the lowest of mankind. So that's the definition of Narottama, is the connection. He's heard this, he knows all this, but doesn't want to follow it. So you can understand it many times, even, because here he's saying follow these rules and regulations. So these are social rules and regulations to engage our conditioned nature. But we find many times devotees don't want to follow, and they make big issues out of following, not following, all these different things. But this is just our conditioning, the demoniac nature. And therefore it creates so much disturbance. Because the demoniac nature means to take people away from the Shastra and to create a disturbance that breaks things down. So we see that there can be a general breakdown in the social structure due to this whimsical following. It's a very clear point. And if someone says, well, I can't understand, I don't know if this is better, that's better. But that's the mode of passion. As Krishna mentions. That understanding, which cannot distinguish between religion and irreligion, between action that should be done and action that should not be done, is in the mode of passion. Like that. So understanding in the mode of passion then creates this difficulty, that we can't tell what to do, what not to do. Why? Because of passion, desire. I have my own desire. I have my own interest. Therefore, I don't want to follow because I don't get the benefits that I want. But the whole process of this Nishkam Karma Yoga, or the purpose of the Varnashram system, is to not work for the fruit. If we're working for the fruit, it's karma. And you'll only get a good fruit if you follow the rule very strictly. And if you don't follow the rule, then you can only get a bad result. That's called sin. Now, the higher principle is this, is we're following for pleasing Krishna. but we're still detached. So if we're working for a fruit, specifically for ourselves, you know, or even we extend that, we're pranamoyists and we are worried about everybody else's fruit, still it's not in line with the scripture, because we're not supposed to be working for a fruit. Then this creates a disturbance, because it's a mode of passion. We have our own desire, and because of this, therefore, we don't want to follow. So we make up our own philosophy. Or we don't know what to do, what not to do, and not sure who's right, who's wrong. All this, because of material desire. So you give up desire, then we can be situated in goodness. Then you can see, this is what the scripture says, this is what the scripture says not to do. Then it becomes very, very clear. Very easy.
We see that Prabhupada, in the rules and regulations he's given us, is oftentimes not as strict as previous acharyas. So then in the course of our reading or study, we may come across those teachings. So if we choose to just follow what Prabhupada has given, then it's proper position?
It's proper. But one has to, two things come up from this. One has to be able to understand what are the principles behind what the acharyas are talking about. Because every rule has a principle behind it. Like that. Many times one principle will have many, many rules. Just like the principle of one must respect authority. So then that gives you the rules on how you worship the deity and respect to the deity, how one worships spiritual, I'd say, personalities, how one deals with the teacher, how one deals with the mother, with the father, other you know, respectable persons of the community based on age, wealth, influence, knowledge, you know, devotion. So I mean, that is a huge field, but it only has the one principle of one must respect authority. So one has to be able to see the principles behind it. If not, then Rupa Goswami mentions, don't read too many books. Because the basic principle is, if you don't know about it, if your acharya has told you something and says this is your field, then you don't know beyond that field, you're not liable for anything beyond that. But if we read in a very broad spectrum, what we read, once we know, we have to follow it. And thus we can connect back how that fits with the rule of our acharya. But if we think it's different, now we know we have to follow. You know, just like you have, you know, some boys and girls, and they're all sitting together, this and that. Nobody cares, no one thinks twice about it. As soon as somebody knows what is the difference between boys and girls, immediately there must be separation. Immediately. So this whole point is this. That's why it said don't read too much, because if one reads too much and especially can't bring it into line, then you have to choose. Do I follow this spiritual master or do I follow this other authority? And that right there is not recommended, for Vaishnavas should never get in between. That's the etiquette. If you have two Vaishnavas that have two different opinions, you shouldn't take either side. Because as long as both are validated by scripture, it's just different viewpoints. You know, like the Gopas have decided that Krishna is going to go out to the, you know, to the forest with them, and the Gopis are thinking that he's going to go to Radhakund with them. We don't get in the middle. Because they're both, supported by Shastra. It's something that's against scriptures, that's another thing. That's not, we're talking about two proper. So then if one doesn't understand, can't mix it, one will think it's two different ones. Like this whole thing with about the soul, you know, disturbs so many devotees. That they think Prabhupada says one thing and Jiva says another. Persons who say that are actually factually unqualified to read beyond Prabhupada's books. Because they can't understand that Prabhupada and Jiva Goswami are not in any way saying anything different. They're saying exactly the same thing. They're just taking different angles of the same thing. You know, just like Jiva Goswami and Rupa are not saying anything different. When Rupa is talking about Parakya Rasa, and Jiva is talking about Swakya Rasa. They're saying exactly the same thing. They're just taking a different angle for their audience. So Rupa Goswami is speaking to actual sincere devotees who can understand these fine principles of Raghunatha Bhakti and who are unattached to the rules, who all are at least to their mundane concept of dharma, let's put it that way. While Jiva Goswami is preaching to those who are very attached to their mundane concept of dharma. And so they see Krishna's pastimes of Rasaludha, or Arati or Ras, as illicit. And in dharma, illicit is just not allowed. And Krishna says he's setting example in Gita, so they can't understand it. He's doing duties and setting example, and if he didn't do, then everybody would follow his example, and they're totally bewildered. So then Jiva Goswami just takes it out of the view of rasa and puts it into the view of tattva. Is that by tattva, here you have God and his energies. So they're eternally married. I mean, it's not that this is only for a pastime. They make it look like this. But factually, the point is, this is eternally married. And then if they want other, you know, so that side, philosophically, they accept, but they say, but it is going on in the pastime. It's just this here, and he gives from this Purana or that Purana, Lord Brahma performed the wedding for Radha and Krishna, and then this pastime, then Lalita performed the wedding for Radha and Krishna. So actually, they're married. But just for the fun, they make it look like it's part of it. So then, so philosophically, that's correct. But for the audience, he just comes from a different angle. He doesn't change the principle in the least. He just comes from a different angle. So if one can connect the principle and how the details are working, then that's fine. One can read so many books. One can't do that, then better stick to one's own acharyas, because one has to approach the previous acharya through your acharya. That's Rupa Goswami's point. It's the fifth point that he makes in practice of sadhana bhakti. And so if you can't see the acharya's works in line with your acharya, then better don't read like that, because unless you see your acharya and are chasing your acharya, no brajabhasi will touch you with a 10-foot pole. That's the bottom line. If you can't be chasing your acharya, they don't want to have anything to do with you, because that means you can't be chasing anybody. You know, we may say whatever we like, but the fact is here is the Lord's devotee, and we can't maintain our chastity. We're running off here and there. Why? Because of knowledge. So therefore, we're not actually a jnani. We're a jigyasu. And jigyasus are known that once they get knowledge they want, then they leave and go somewhere else. They're not actually interested in Krishna. Maybe if they get the association of pure devotees, pure Vaishnavas, then they will come to the platform of jnana. But otherwise, as a jigyasu, who cares? Right? They want knowledge. So much knowledge is their thing. But if you want Krishna, then that's another consideration. So one has to be very, very careful. What was Vishwanath's point with the Gayatri? That Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami said it was, I think, either 23.5 or 24.5. 23.5. So a Gayatri Chanda is 24 syllables in groups, three groups of eight. That makes the Gayatri Chanda, the poetry of Gayatri, is three groups of eight syllables. So, I mean, that's common. Everybody knows that. Now, Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami has said it's 23.5. So, he knows grammar, Vishwanath, and he can't figure out how it works. So now the Acharya has said it, and he doesn't want to doubt the Acharya, but he can't reconcile what the Acharya has said and what the scriptures have said. So not wanting to take any sides and not being able to live with the fact that he can't reconcile scientists, he's decided that he'll, you know, commit suicide. So I think that night then Srimati Radharani came to him and told him to look in, I think, the Sanat Kumar Samhita or something. And the answer to his problem is there. So in the Sanatkumar Samhita, it gives one very obscure grammatical rule. If this particular thing happens, then this letter goes to half a mantra, half a syllable. And then he was very happy. And then he wrote a book describing this whole thing. You know, told the history of this whole thing and the dream and everything like that. And then explained how that is. So that's the point, is if we have our acharya says one thing and appears another acharya, we always take our acharya. We just say, I'm not intelligent enough to understand. It means whatever the acharyas have said, Prabhupada's already put in his purports. We can be rest assured. He's already done it. And that, but he hasn't necessarily done it with all technical, grammatical rules and all these different things that may inspire our jigyasu side. He's done it in such a way to try to situate us on the platform of pure devotional service. So many will say, oh, I so much appreciate how this one or that one explains it, because it caters to the intellect, like that, very analytical, like that. And we may, you know, conditioned by the intellect, we're used to it. But Prabhupada's point, that's the conclusion. Then from that, if we can see the technical, that's fine. Like Krishna here, he gives the conclusions and all that first. Right? Then he comes to the detail. Right? He's already presented karma and jnana, the aspects of Nishkam Karma Yoga, in the first six chapters. He's already dealt with it. Then he deals with bhakti. Now he comes back to it to give fine detail. But unless one's already accepted the first 12 chapters, the last six aren't going to make any sense. Because it's just finer details of the same thing. You know, here the point has been made. You don't follow the Vedic rules and regulations, then that's demoniac nature. So we're talking about getting out of here. So that's Nishkam Karma Yoga. That means following your prescribed duty, but without attachment. Right, we've already discussed why there's no attachment and all that in the previous chapters. Right, but now he's just bringing it down. Now you've heard all the conclusions. Now you've heard all the details. Now you either accept it or you know, understand your position. You accept it and be liberated, or don't accept it and remain in the material world. Basically, that's what's happening. And Prabhupada makes that very clear in his purports. It's interesting, this thing of Daivavrana Ashram. It was one of the requests of Bhaktivinoda Thakur to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that he establish Daivavrana Ashram. In a personal letter to him, I think in 1910. He left in 1914. So it means just before he went into Nirjan Bhajan. He wrote that letter. Is that preach, glorify Mayapur, and establish this Daivavrana Ashram. That says that otherwise the Smartavrana Ashram is taken over and everybody is being bewildered by this. He said he established this Daivavrana Ashram. So it goes back to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, back to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He felt that we have to actually establish the proper social structure for devotees, so that's the Daivavrana Ashram system. And then Krishna's final point in this chapter, text 24. One should therefore understand what is duty and what is not duty by the regulation of the scriptures. Knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so that he may gradually be elevated. So now this is the positive side. Krishna said, you don't follow it, fine. You're not going to get happiness, you're not going to attain perfection, and you won't go back to Godhead. He said that in the last one. And here he says, therefore one should understand what is duty, what is not duty, by the regulations of the scriptures. Knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so that he may gradually be elevated. So Krishna said, gradually. Like this. Gradually doesn't necessarily mean we're not working over many, many lifetimes. Gradually means in this lifetime. We accept it may take us many lifetimes, but our determination is to do it in this lifetime, because that's what our acharyas ask us to do. So this age is so bad, so not worth waiting around, so just get out now. So gradually, it means over however many years, and based on the regulation of the scriptures. So this is Krishna's conclusion. So that's the point. We can accept this, or we can make up our own, or we don't follow this, or we just jump over all this and go to the highest platforms, and like that. We have these choices. So then Bhurijan says here, one should use his human form of life to faithfully follow Shastra, to avoid lust, anger, and greed, and to at least gradually elevate himself towards Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada's purport carries to a conclusion concepts that Krishna has been developing in the past several chapters. Quote, in human society, aversion to the principles of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the cause of all fall downs. That is the greatest offense of human life. Therefore, Maya, the material energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always giving us trouble in the shape of the threefold miseries. This material energy is constituted of the three modes of material nature. One has to raise himself to at least the mode of goodness before the path to understand the Supreme Lord can be opened. Without raising oneself to the standard of the mode of goodness, one remains in ignorance and passion, which are the cause of demoniac life. Those in the modes of passion and ignorance deride the scriptures, deride the holy man, and deride the proper understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They disobey the instructions of the spiritual master. Note here, they disobey. This means someone who has surrendered to a spiritual master, has come in contact, or even taken initiation. This point is now even more clear than the last one, where he just says, a man theoretically may know all these things, but it does not apply. A man may theoretically know all these things, but if he does not apply them in his own life, then he's known to be the lowest of mankind. So here he's even though they disobey the instruction of the spiritual master, and they do not care for the regulations of the scriptures. In spite of hearing the glories of devotional service, they are not attracted. Thus they manufacture their own way of elevation. These are some of the defects of human society, which lead to the demoniac status of life. If, however, one is able to be guided by a proper and bona fide spiritual master, who can lead one to the path of elevation, to the higher stage, then one's life becomes successful. Also says the defects of human society. So these are defects, because the point is human life is meant to elevate, to be situated in goodness, follow the scriptures, good association. But the defect is we don't want to follow. So this then creates the demoniac, which lead to the demoniac status of life. So in other words, if we are not careful, or we cultivate or remain attached to these qualities, that will lead down. And if we give them up, it will go up. So it's not that having these qualities automatically one is a demon. It means that these are the qualities that may be in the heart that we have to deal with. These are anarthas. Like this. Either we have some problem with the scriptures, some problem that says the holy man deride the proper understanding of the Supreme Lord. They disobey the spiritual master. So that means deride the holy man. These, senior devotees like this. So we have to be very careful. Now we can take this from two different levels. And I'll also explain basically the platform what I'm speaking from. Is the general point here is these are some of the defects of human society which lead to the demoniac status of life. Or here, in spite of hearing the glories of devotional service, they are not attracted. So we can take this in very broad term, a very big picture, basically meaning the non-devotees and the devotees. Like that. And that is the main point. That is the specific main point. That is the principle. Those who accept take up devotional practices. Those that don't, then don't take them up. But, so that is a general point, and that works specifically for the Kanista platform. But what we're bringing out here, which Prabhupada also writes into his purports here, is that the Madhyama, then he comes to the platform, or the advanced Kanista, comes to the platform seriously looking at the anarthas within the heart. So anarthas are born of doubts. Doubts means demoniac qualities. So someone who's really serious to get rid of these then looks at it from that point. It's not that, well, I'm a devotee, I can't have any of these things. And if you're saying devotees may have this, then you must be a demon or this or that. No. The serious practitioner of Krishna consciousness, after some time, not in the beginning stage, after many years of practicing, especially when one comes situated at following the four overlooked principles, chanting, situating oneself in service, becomes very easy. It's kind of like the habit. Then, that is like what Lord Chaitanya describes as the first cleaning of Gundicha. You know, means you cleared out all the big stones, twigs, rocks, and, you know, heavy amounts of dirt and leaves. Then Lord Chaitanya goes back to the fine cleaning and takes a little sticks and gets in the cracks between the stones and gets out the fine points. So these are all the anarthas, so the doubts in the heart. So we must understand there's these two levels of cleaning. Lord Chaitanya performed this pastime just to show this. Prabhupada makes this point in the purport. So in the beginning, we're trying to establish ourselves in Krishna consciousness, following the lifestyle, this and that. Then we come to the point of fine refinement of this. The service is going on. The quantity is going on. Now we must work on the quality. Quantity will expand unlimitedly, you know, for however long Krishna wants us to do or wants this mission to expand. That's going on. But we also have to improve the quality. Many letters, Prabhupada say, now we have so many man temples, now let us boil the milk. Let us now start on the quality. Many points he makes this. So now we have to accept this point. Otherwise, then this non-acceptance of this point is one of the demoniac qualities that Krishna is talking about. We don't want to accept that the scriptures say, once you situate yourself, now go for the fine points. Like that. And instead we make up our own philosophy. Do we follow Varnashram not? Do we follow like this or not? But then we're Westerners, we're special. We have different considerations, so we should develop a new culture. Who's going to do that, right? Culture means coming from, is Dharma. Dharma comes from God. So unless, you know, someone in the community steps forward, you know, and says that they're a God or the Messiah, then we're going to have a problem establishing such a thing. So this kind of mentality, basically here, by these purports, is not to be entertained. It's just, here it is, we take it, we accept it. Of course, one has to use one's intelligence, maturity, and realization how to apply it. But we first have to accept it. Right? You can't apply something you don't accept. So this must be made. So mostly in this class, I'm talking in that class, because we have been requested by senior devotees to discuss the Gita, so I'm discussing it from that light. These points that we're making very strong are not necessarily meant for the new devotee. We are discussing the points of someone who has advanced and wants to see within themselves what are those doubts and things that are holding them back, like that, how to look for them. And these are ways to look. Here. Those in the modes of passion and ignorance deride the scriptures, deride the holy man, and deride the proper understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They disobey the instruction of the spiritual master, and they do not care for the regulations of the scriptures. In spite of hearing the glories of devotional service, they are not attracted. One may say, well, that's only demoniac, but the tenth offense of the holy name is we maintain material attachments even after hearing so many instructions. So Krishna's previous chapters has pointed out, you have attachment to him, you have attachment to material nature. You can't have both at once. It's one or the other. So either you're 100% attached to material nature and zero attached to the Lord, or you're 80% attached to material nature, 20% to Krishna, or 80% to Krishna, 20% to the material nature, or 100% to Krishna and 0% to the material nature. You can't have full attachment to Krishna and full attachment to material nature. It doesn't work. You cannot be situated looking at the shadow with the sun to your back and looking at the sun and looking at the shadow. It's one or the other. That's the point. So one has to, one has to accept that this point comes is if the glories, in spite of hearing the glories of devotional service, they are not attracted. So we've heard so many glories, right? But we're not fully surrendering. So why is that? Because some demoniac nature is there. So maybe we must learn to find that and root it out. You know, Krishna is very kind. It's lust, anger, or greed generally are the basis of these. You know, desiring to lord it over, desiring attachment to the material nature, wanting to control or enjoy. And these are basic, fundamental things. I mean, there's so many details in there, unlimited. But these are the fundamental details. And then from that, we can understand, this is what I have to work at. So it's not a matter of, for the new devotee, it may look overwhelming. Oh, so much is there, how I can progress. But the point is that once we come to knowledge, that is the inspiration. We're in ignorance, we don't know we have these anarthas. So we're going on. But when we come to the point we understand they're there, and we can understand what they are, then it should be inspiring, because once you understand what they are, then they can be removed. Like if you have a lawn, you don't know what a weed is, then there's a good chance you have a lawn full of weeds. Right? But if you understand what are weeds, how to identify them, then you look, I have so many weeds, then what's the next step? You go out and start pulling them out. But before you didn't pull them out, so you were happy, but you can't be fully happy. Because the weeds are there, so our lack of attachment to Krishna is there. But we're not mature enough to see it. But then after a while we start to see it. Then we see, I have these qualities. So it's not that these qualities, oh, when I joined the movement, you know, mind was so peaceful and none of these bad qualities were there. No, these bad qualities were always there. Just we didn't see them. We came from gross, you know, desire to control and enjoy the material nature. Very gross. And so then we come in contact with Krishna consciousness, such as a relief. So we're so happy in that, but we don't notice that these qualities we bring with us. Because we're not trained enough, we're not refined enough. So as we progress, we become refined. So then we may think, oh, all these are coming up. So much desire is coming in my heart. So therefore I should attend to this desire. No, not necessarily. These desires are always there. We just weren't trained enough to see them. We didn't have the knowledge to see. Because we see the jnana part of the Gita, these last few chapters, they describe how to see the difference between the body and the soul, and the super soul. So in the beginning, Krishna is just saying, there is you, there is the body, there is the super soul, and you should serve by doing your duties. So the emphasis is on taking your conditioned nature and engaging in the Lord's service without desire for a fruit. But then later it's getting into very fine points. How to just see your every movement, even in devotional service, is being carried out by the modes. And then how you can adjust that I'm doing devotional service even though the modes of nature are moving everything around. Like that. I want to cook for Krishna, but the modes of nature are pushing my hand. I want to sing for Krishna. The modes of nature are making my voice work. And so therefore, the modes of nature are doing it, so I simply want to do it. So what's the results? Because Krishna is sanctioning. I sing nicely, Krishna sanctioned that. I don't sing nicely, Krishna sanctioned that. So I should not be attached to the result. So it brings in another very fine aspect. So that can't be seen in the beginning. Because otherwise we just see there's us, and then there's the enemy and this and that and so many different things. And then, but with time we can see these fineness. So that's from purification. So as one becomes purified, one actually starts to see more. And before what he didn't notice, you know, then he sees as a quality. You know, our before what we thought were, we were being very practical in that and not offering too many obeisances here and there. Then after a while we find out actually this is what Rupa Goswami says, don't avoid offering obeisances. You know, but in the beginning we thought we were being very practical or something like this or, you know, very, no, like that. So many times we see things like this and we see that what was the basis behind that? So whatever, we have our determination, we go on, we're doing our service, but with time Krishna reveals more and more, finer and finer things can be removed from the heart. Then we come up with perfection. Because Krishna always talks about, we remove all this anarthas and all these imperfections from the heart, we come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform, then we can start to love Krishna. Like that. Meaning love Krishna means factually love Krishna, like wholehearted, completely. This doesn't mean from the beginning one doesn't have attraction and affection for Krishna. Just it may be small compared to how much attraction and affection we have for material nature. But it means at that point, that Brahma-Bhuta platform, there's no more attraction or affection for the material nature. So now we can go on unlimitedly developing our attraction and affection for Krishna. So that point we call, this is the real thing. Before that, it's still, it is devotional. Does this make some sense? So this is the flavor of these conversations, that we're taking it basically from the middle. From the middle we see then properly how up works, and we see how down works. Then it gives means they themselves are unable to change it. So if they just follow the process that fits their position, then they will start to become purified. Sin will go away. If they can perform duties without attachment, then even if they can't do that, they are attached and at least give the fruit. You know, or a portion of the fruit. And that, and if they can't do that, then keep the whole fruit, but at least follow Krishna's rules to get that. You know, that's the point. Is then one will become purified from that of sins, and knowledge will be gained. So even if they take that platform, that's fine. But they should basically keep their opinion of themselves to themselves. And they should understand that that is not the best position. So therefore, they should not, by their own endeavor, put themselves in a position to be over the lives of others who may not be have such an opinion. In other words, they should not thrust themselves into positions of authority where they influence the lives of many. Because with an opinion like that, better they just work on their own heart. Like that. You know? Because the point is where we accept that the process does work on everybody. Because that means I'm so unique and special in the universe, that Krishna is saying these things very generally, that it'll work on anybody. So now here we found a soul that they are so unique amongst all souls that the process won't work on them, how Krishna says. So then, you know, that's pride. So generally, someone who is proud like that, then Vishwanath, I think Prabhupada quotes Vishwanath in his comment, in his purport on Kapila Muni's description of the devotional service mixed with the modes. He says, one mixed with the mode of ignorance, they're very proud of their abilities, proud of their position, proud of their knowledge. He means this. In other words, these qualities of what we would call the Naradhamma. But they're still devotees. You know, they're not the full-on, certified demon. But it just means such a devotee, it says, should be respected, always dealt with properly, but should be avoided in association. It means totally. We always deal nicely with them, but we'll avoid their association. That. So one has to be careful of that. Yeah. And then mixed with passion means that One worships the deity for fruit. One wants fruit, and one has one's own idea. Both of them, passion, ignorance, they're separatists. They have their own idea of devotional service, how they will perform it. So we see that these points that Prabhupada's mentioning, it is the neutral point. So you'll have demons who are not so demoniac, that they're situated more in passion, or they may be in ignorance, but they're not totally necessarily against the devotional process. They're developing those qualities. They're neophyte demons. And with time and practice, they'll become, you know, full-on matured, you know, hardcore demons. You know, Krishna promises. He says he'll do that. Attaining repeated birth amongst the species of demoniac life, O son of Kunti, such persons can never approach me. Gradually they will sink down, the most abominable type of existence. So like that. But you also then have the neophyte devotees who may have these qualities just due to being in the material world since time immemorial. That's understood. That's accepted. And no one's complaining. But one should not be satisfied and think that that is a very respectable position and, you know, Krishna's just got to accept me the way I am because that's just the way I am. You know, but Krishna will accept you the way I am, but he, as Prabhupada points out here, in human society, aversion to the principles of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead means, the principles of understanding means humility, pridelessness, and all these kind of things, is the cause of all fall downs. That is the greatest offense of human life. Therefore, Maya, the material energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always giving us trouble in the shape of the threefold miseries. Like that. So if we wonder why also we are having so much difficulties in the material world, this is why. Because we're not surrendering to Krishna. And Krishna lets us know through the material energy that we haven't surrendered. Otherwise, if we have surrendered fully, the advanced devotee, the modes of nature work, they don't bother. He's unattached to the results. Like that, even if it is hot or cold or fame or infamy or these things. Krishna mentions them because they do happen. You know? Haridas Thakur was infamous. You know, the Muslim community, they thought badly of him. Right? He didn't care. Like that. You'll find many, you know, who are pious, you know, one could say Haridas Thakur is very pious. Or pious, if their community feels bad about them, it pains them very much. They don't want to disturb anyone. So if their own community, their own family members feel bad about them, it disturbs them. But here he knows by the nature of the modes of nature, this is happens. And he can't worry about it. And the devotees, the community of Vaishnavas, they're praising him. He's famous. He also just takes that. That's just, you know, these things happen. He's not disturbed by that. So because of this, he being so equipoised and being totally attached to the holy name, therefore Lord Chaitanya came and performed that whole pastime with passing the Haridas Thakur. You know, we don't hear that with anybody else. So very special because of his position. So these things happen, but it doesn't bother him. So if they're happening and they're bothering us very much, then that means Krishna's trying to tell us something. And that means in some way or another, we're not understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In some way we're holding back, we're still maintaining our attachment to some of the demoniac qualities. And therefore, these problems happen. So then one has to work. So this chapter is here so that we can identify further. Krishna has mentioned it before about the divine and demoniac, and now he gives the details, how we can identify what it is. So now we take these and we apply them. Now, the purpose of this, of also what goes along with, the neophyte generally doesn't discriminate these things for himself, and generally not so much for others. No, he has a tendency to criticize and all these things, difficult to work with others. But now with the platform we're talking about here, we actually go in, look in the heart and discriminate and find them with the purpose of uprooting, we have to be very careful that in doing this, we don't maintain one of the demoniac qualities, which is to fault-find others. Like that. It means the divine quality is aversion to fault-finding. So such a person that has aversion to fault-finding, they actually, because they are, why? Because they can see faults in themselves. So they have an aversion to finding in others. They can see the good qualities. They can find the faults in themselves, they can find the good qualities in others. They go together. If you can find only faults in others, you'll generally be able to find great qualities in oneself. Those who are expert at finding fault in others are also expert at finding good qualities in themselves. Someone who's expert at finding fault in themselves can find good qualities in others. So then, such a person then can successfully see what are the faults in those who may be dependents of them, who they have some responsibility to help. And because they're able to find their own faults and remove them, they can train them how to find their faults and remove them. But if we can't find our own faults, we can only find faults in others, there'll be no use. Therefore, it's not called constructive criticism. Constructive criticism means I can see my faults, I am also able to see that same fault in you. Like that. We are in the process of removing it from ourselves, so we can help you how to remove it from yourself. And because we ourselves are not very qualified, then you will probably be more expert in removing it. But at least we know the theory. But if we can't find them in ourselves, and thus not able to remove them in ourselves, and we find them in others, there's zero benefit for the other person. Right? Unless the other person is very highly qualified. If that other person is able to see their own faults. But if they're not, you cannot get them to see their own faults, because you can't see your faults. I can't get someone to do something that I myself can't do, or have the interest in doing. Like that. So, that makes a difference between fault-finding and constructive criticism. Constructive criticism means I'm already looking for the faults in myself, and thus I've seen them in you, because I'm studying in that field. And this is what I understand how to remove it. That's constructive criticism. But just seeing faults in others, anyone can see that. Anybody can go out and look at the moon and find faults. It doesn't take anyone with any qualifications, you know, to do that. So finding fault, the mind accepts and rejects. So anything we don't like, it's not the same as us, because we have great qualities, right? We are greatly qualified. So if anybody does anything that's not like how I do it, it must be a fault. Because I'm full of good qualities. This is the... But instead, if one looks, I have no good qualities. Any good qualities I have are simply from the other devotees, reflections from them. And even that ability to reflect has come from these devotees. Then one may be able to see something that this is bad for devotional service. Otherwise, it won't happen. By this vrata of offering lamps, this Damodar vrata, then one achieves the mercy of Srimati Rajarani. So in this way we can develop the divine qualities and give up the demoniac. So now we will practically apply the knowledge learned from this chapter. So then tomorrow, the Lord, I'm saying, sanctions, then the next chapter, 17, then then brings out the point of what about those who don't follow Shastra but are not demoniac, you know, which is the next natural question. So then we have the divisions of faith. So Krishna says, you can just look at what they're doing and tell what mode it's in, and then you can tell where they're situated. If it's goodness, it's divine. If it's passion or ignorance, it's demoniac. So next tomorrow will be the divisions of faith. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaritā Bhakta Vrinda ki, Sanitai Gaurvini, Om.